Today, we're talking about In Development by Rachel Spangler, which was published by Brisk in May 2018. From a young age, Kobe Galloway made a career of playing the girl next door on the silver screen, only she's not a teenager anymore. Ready to challenge herself artistically and earn the part she's always dreamed of, she's forced to face the realization that in order to win the roles afforded to edgier actresses, she might first have to audition by playing someone edgier in her day-to-day life. Pop star Lila Wilder built a multimedia empire by always having her finger on the pulse of what's hot. However, as she struggles to produce her next smash hit record, she's finding it hard to keep her name in the public eye, and a string of tumultuous relationships with Hollywood boy toys no longer captivates anyone's attention. Both women tentatively agree to a headline-grabbing fomance with two simple rules. Always stick to the script and never forget that on the stage of public perception, nothing is real. Can two women find love in a world of carefully crafted illusions, or will a successful charade mean the potential for something more gets left on the cutting room floor? Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
Hey, Caitlin. I'm doing well. How are you today?
Good. I'm good. You know, I've been doing some home improvement projects. I've been reading a lot. Last episode, I mentioned that I sort of took a little break from reading lesfic, and I reimmersed myself in the world of The Real Housewives. And I had a few people say that they are also obsessed with Bravo, so I feel safe to say what my current obsession is right now, which is the rumors of a torrid lesbian romance between Brandi Glanville and Denise Richards.
Charlie Sheen's ex-wife?
Yes, Charlie Sheen's ex-wife.
Why do I know that?
I don't know. So Denise is a current housewife on Beverly Hills.
Okay.
Which those who know that Brandi was unceremoniously kicked off of Beverly Hills for getting involved in a lawsuit with a different housewife. Well, basically, Denise Richards, there was lots of rumors that she had stopped filming the season that's going to be out soon, and it kind of came out, and Brandi herself has added a lot of fuel to the fire through her social media that she and Denise were having a months-long affair, and that the other housewives call Denise out on it, and for lying to her husband about it, and it kind of feels like a gift. You know, I've watched these shows since I was a small teenager, and it's always been the straightest of straight couples. And I don't know if this couple is real or if it's fake, but this is exactly what I deserve and need from my Real Housewives franchise. So that's what I've been up to. What have you been up to?
Nothing that exciting. Last year I ran my first Spartan race, and I'm trying to train to do it again. So I'll be in DC in June to see you. I feel like somewhere between, you know, that person who's like, yeah, I'm taking control of my health, and also trying not to sound like a douche.
It's been a little bit since we've talked about lesfic and lesbian romance, because I was up in Connecticut with you and your spouse just like 2 weekends ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a lot to catch up on.
We do.
I'm excited.
Because we, for the most part, managed to not talk about it when she was in the room. You two were friends before we were, so I tried to make sure I was scarce so you guys could, like, just work on your friendship and keep it healthy and going. But yeah, it's going to be nice to talk to you about this.
Well, I thought a lot about you, or let me just say, I thought a lot about your spouse and some of our other mutual friends as we were reading this book, because In Development, which is the book by Rachel Spangler that we'll be discussing in today's episode, it's kind of timely that we're doing this because we're in the midst of a Taylor Swift media blitz with her new documentary that just came out on Friday on Netflix. I am not a Taylor Swift listener, but an ex is and was. she has been sending me all of the articles, all of the things. So I feel like I know just as much as there could be to know about this recent iteration of Taylor Swift.
We watched it yesterday.
What do you think?
I mean, I enjoyed watching it. I was very thankful for it. I think the producer who did it did a lovely job.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to Maggie Rogers' cover of Tim McGraw because that feels age-appropriate and doesn't make me feel creepy when I like it that much. I am very much that person who is very pop culture illiterate these days, so there had to be some extra research to go with this.
Well, I think it's pretty... I say it's timely because In Development by Rachel Spangler is, she admits, based a little bit upon the image of Taylor Swift. Spangler writes about on her blog, and she has sort of inspiration boards readily available about using the aura and the aesthetics of Taylor Swift to kind of create or to
as a fan fiction kickoff for.
Yes, Spangler's pretty open about the fact that she used Taylor Swift's image, her aura, as inspiration and a kickoff point for the pop star Lila Wilder, who is one of our main characters in Development.
So before we go too far,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
How did it feel?
Uh-huh.
For the first time since we've really done any books where people could listen to us talk about them in other places,
mm-hmm.
to read an Ice Queen with the same working drive that you might share.
It felt pretty frustrating because on the one hand, I keenly felt like I could see myself on the page. I think those of you who might know me or have spent some time with me will say that I'm really driven and focused, sometimes to the discomfort or detriment of others around me. And I have a plan. And so I loved seeing myself reflected on the page. And I liked that it was such a fun, sexy character who had so much power. But from an emotional standpoint, watching this romance form and blossom and struggle, I wanted to shake her. I wanted to take her aside and be like, listen, let's talk.
It's just like, I mean, I fulfill my trope and I am like, oh my God, you're so annoying when I see you as a character in a book. So, I mean, we all have our things.
Yeah, no, it was interesting. And I will say that I've read other romance novels that are similarly about an ice queen, but this one felt so, I believed it and I felt such kinship to Lila in a way that I haven't really with a lot of other ice queens that I've seen written so far.
So let's unpack that some.
Okay.
Why? Why did you?
So Lila is a musician. She's built this multimedia empire, sort of always delivering what the people don't know that they want.
Right.
And I found her determination and her drive to really be matched by the tender hidden part of herself. I felt like there's a lot of backstory that we can and probably will get into with her history, with her family, why she's doing this. And I felt like it really aided the creation of this character who uses her public persona and her drive towards what I think she would describe as like domination of the music industry as a means to protect herself and to give herself more power and control.
So Caitlin, how do you feel about fomance as a genre? You picked the book. I'm intrigued to know, like, why? Why'd you pick this book?
So I kind of love it. I think I like the forced closeness that members of a fomance have to build with each other, I think it lays really good groundwork for building trust and communication. And I think it leads to some amazing drama. And I love that so often, I'm kind of a sucker. I'm learning through this journey that I'm kind of a sucker for these books where it's about like a movie star or a recording artist or a TV writer. I'm kind of a sucker for those. And I don't know what to do with that personally, but I like the stakes feel high in a fomance in a way that I can really immediately grab onto. And this one especially is so well done.
I mean, the writing's super, super, super tight in this. And the narrative is great. And the subplot B, C, and D are all... I'm using all this coded language. Let's just talk about it.
Yeah, let's just do it.
So on a tip of a tongue's Instagram, somebody very quickly and kindly shared the Pinterest page from Spangler's personal Pinterest with influences for In Development. And I had not read the book yet when that was shared. You picked the book and you had already read it. And I was, a week behind you. So I was waiting. So I didn't have the time to try to figure out who Colby was based on. But then through this Pinterest board, I guess I'm led to believe she's loosely based on Ellen Page.
Yeah, at least aesthetically, looks-wise, Spangler is really careful to say that she's not basing any of the their internal life. Mm-hmm. You know, she wouldn't go as far as to say that's what she thinks this is happening. But as soon as I saw that Pinterest page and it clicked into place, I was like, yes. Give me the Taylor Swift, Ellen Page fanfic where Taylor Swift, masterminds this relationship and also gives Ellen Page a makeover.
I wonder what my reading would have been like had I not had those two pieces of information already.
So the first time I read, not to interrupt, but the first time I read it, I kept imagining Kobe as someone more like an early Miley Cyrus or... I was thinking of people that are in, like, Nicholas Sparks movies.
Mandy Moore in A Walk to Remember.
Yeah, like, these really... And not to say that Ellen Page doesn't have this, like, sweet face, but I was thinking of women that I really do associate with the Girl Next Door romance Hallmark Disney movie. And not to say that it didn't work as well that way, it did, but I felt like... there was something about Paige and how much of a blank canvas she is and how she, like Kobe, like, we know who she is, but she isn't, like, the name on everybody's lips, to quote Chicago. So it allowed me to, I could see why it would be easy for an audience to believe in a romance with someone like that. And to believe in this paradigm shift of her image in a way that didn't quite work with an actress like Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
When we open the book, we have Kobe, who is the girl next door. They describe her as doing Nicholas Sparks movies and always playing like the teenage or young college age love interest. Mm-hmm. And I could see that, you know, whoever it was, I could see that in my head. What was interesting to me about the first conversations that she has with her agent, the kickoff for all of this, is she wants to play this edgy role in a movie, Vigilant, which there's no script that's public yet. It's not a project that's owned by anyone. She's bringing it to her agent and saying, I want to be attached to this project. And he makes a comment that says, you know, no one's gonna believe that you are a shit-talking lesbian. And she says, well, but I am. I've been out. Why won't people see me as a lesbian? And it was an interesting, I took a step back at that point because I couldn't place in my lexicon an actress who fulfills both of those roles, like in my current understanding. And I kind of had to sit and ponder the concept of, would America really let a woman who is queer and out and open be their Nicholas Sparks fantasy heroine? I don't know.
Where Kobe starts when we meet her versus where she is by the epilogue.
Mm-hmm.
And her presentation and her sense of self. I don't often see too many left of center towards tomboy or masculine presenting actresses on television very much, on primetime TV, like basic cable TV. So her being seen as the girl next door made more sense for me for a studio to pick her up than where she eventually presents.
That makes me think of Kristen Stewart. A little bit different, because when she was in Twilight, she already skewed awkward. Like, I think we really wanted her to be our girl next door. And I say we, as like the public, I think we were ready to lift her up to be the next girl next door teen movie. Mm-hmm. And she just didn't have that demeanor. She was so awkward. She was so obviously uncomfortable playing a part in public, playing a persona of herself, even though she was dating her co-star. And then she had that whole scandal of publicly getting caught cheating on Pattinson with her director of a different project. And then after all of that, dust up came out. She's who I think of when I think of like an ass-kicking out woman who's queer and doing these edgy projects that have decent money backing them up. And I think Kobe was as a character and her place in the landscape of this American media that Spangler has created is one of the few instances in the beginning of the book where I was like, oh, this is like a utopia kind of thing where it's not a big deal. It didn't ruin her career to be out, and it's not going to ruin her career to be a little rougher, be a little more buzzy and edgy. And to me, I wasn't sure that I 100% believed it, but I was along for the ride.
Oh, yeah. Why didn't you believe it? Because I didn't get kicked out.
I'm thinking of how readily I feel like I and members of my immediate community are so excited to grab onto someone and lift, like grab onto a celebrity and lift them into the projects that we want to see them in. Mm-hmm. And I could see, like, if I was had a Kobe who was the girl next door but was out and who made a drastic switch to something where she was playing an out lesbian, kind of edgy, I would be excited and into that. I wouldn't need the 6 months of buildup of her maintaining that life in public the way that in the book, it's not even really an option. If Kobe wants to be this part, if she wants to be in this movie, she needs to make people believe that she is that in real life.
Okay, so unpopular thought from a person who presents not as feminine as you do, right?
Huh. Yeah.
I don't think the queer community is who they're waiting for. I think they know we're like, here's our money, take it, we want to see ourselves. Yeah. I think her being there is to make straight people comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think the community's got to feel like, oh, we've watched her change. Oh, we've watched her grow. Oh, we've followed this relationship, be it a fomance to a real, whatever. Kobe's evolution isn't for the gay community. We're already.
Yeah. Like, well, and normally we talk about questions at the end, but this, I can just give a little teaser to one of my questions about this book is I have no idea what the hell movie Vigilant is supposed to be or who it's for or what it's doing, because I have all of my assumptions based on like the talk of their costumes, the talk of scenes or whatever. And then those kind of get displaced by the epilogue. Let's just say that.
Can we talk about these two and who holds the power?
What are you trying to say?
There is so much, I don't, trip, fall. God, I see so much of you two in here. and there are moments that I'm just like, yep, that's something that this person I'm thinking of in your world, or projecting myself into that situation in my world, but still the power's not shifted because the power still belongs to you two. And this person's just giving you permission to feel like you're not in control all the time. Not to say that, like, Poopy's, like, walked over or anything, but I think, like, the great gift with an ice queen and this whole, like, melting of an ice queen's heart is not actually any real action. It's having the energy to be there until they can expose themselves in some way. Like, I've heard you and she both, like, allude to ice queens and your love for romances and ice queens. And then, like, you make a joke, you two cheers, and then you get a little quiet as if it's something to feel guilty about. And as a person madly in love with the person who occasionally calls herself a former ice queen, I don't think there's anything rough. I think that it's just about, we all put up walls in different ways. Some people run away. Some people stay busy. Some people just keep it up front. And I think ice queens get a bad rep because they're usually feminine presenting women who just say from day one, I don't have time to waste, so please don't waste mine. And the first time they say please, and after that they said, I told you not to fucking waste my time. So in this book, the power dynamic is really, really interesting to me, because I think she holds it all the time.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think Lila does hold the power for the majority of the relationship, and I think you see her thaw when she, not when she gives power to Kobe, but when she
shares power with Kobe.
I think you see her start to thaw when she acknowledges that the power she holds is finite and doesn't extend as far as she thinks. And then the moments when you see her and Kobe really connecting and having these emotional building blocks of a true relationship are when she's sharing power. I don't think she ever gives up power in her relationship.
So let's talk about, you know, they start this romance, they go out for their dinner, there's the tiramisu exchange, there's eventually a moment where we find out that Kobe's first kiss was actually on screen, and she felt that, like, well, she was playing somebody awkward on screen, so the awkwardness of doing that publicly would translate, but her first experience with a woman was, she referred to it as a gift or given to her herself, I think there was, like,
yeah, she refers to it as a gift, and when Lila says, oh, are you going to tell me that story, Kobe says, no.
No, we have and to wait.
Yeah, and it's one of those moments where you can see, I liked Kobe because she so often tried to push and get the power that she could grasp a hold of, and the fact that she is pushing for it is so sexy to Lila, and Lila has been seen as a man-eater. She sort of dated a long line of celebrity whoever's. And this is her first time, fake or not, being in a relationship with a woman. And you see Kobe being really sweet where she says, you know, this was my first kiss. And then she takes Lila off to a corner and says,
she takes her to a restaurant bathroom. They're in the restaurant. Yeah. They go to the bathroom and nobody else is in there. And This is a very, like, real thing. I don't know what your experience in life has been like, but, you know, it is a space designated for women.
And I've made out in plenty of bathrooms.
Yeah, but, like, like this type of kiss, though, I mean, my bathroom stuff is never this type of, like, kindness. Like, it's much more.
I mean, I think you're right. This is a kindness because Kobe does take her to this private area and says, well, she doesn't say, she kisses her.
She does.
And then says, I wanted your first time kissing another woman to be something private and for you. And we can do our fake first kiss for the paparazzi, you know, the way that we've planned it, but this is a surprise to Lila. And it works on multiple levels, because on the one hand, it's such a private, quiet moment, and Lila's a person who's not really used to having private, quiet moments. Everything, you get the sense that a lot of aspects of her life and her relationships have been for other people's eyes. So this is a glimpse of her connecting with Kobe in a private setting. You also get the sense that she's touched by how thoughtful Kobe is, because Kobe doesn't want her to experience the same feelings of shame and loss that she did when her first kiss was for cameras.
Yeah. But Lila being the boss she is, so they have their kiss in front of the cameras later. Mm-hmm. Kobe gets home, checks her phone, and Lila texts her the first kiss was better, referring mm-hmm. to the kiss in the bathroom. Complete BAMF move, complete ice cream move. Like, oh my God. Something you and Kristen would do completely. Like, yes. Yeah. Just the writing was so,
it's so freaking good.
Spot on. Just, because it feels vulnerable in that moment. It doesn't feel tacky. It feels, their banter with each other is just so good. And when the banter stops, it's equally as good, because I found myself physically like leaning further into the device I was reading the book on, as if they were getting quieter, so I was trying to get closer, versus when they were sparring with each other and I would just sit in the normal position I sat in when I read. Which I think is really a testament to the writing style. You know, that physical thing where you feel that you need to get closer to the space, even though the space has been the same physical space you've been sitting in or standing in the whole time while you've been consuming it.
So it's really easy for me. Well, Lila has many moments where she's angry at Kobe, because mm-hmm. Kobe isn't following her rules. She's not following the plan. And
she needs to chill.
I don't blame her.
They've known each other for 5 minutes. It is a laundry list the size of freaking Montana. And Lila, she's not asking Kobe what she needs in the process.
Fomances, and has
she is
done
not
this
talking to Kobe.
Before.
She is telling Kobe what to do. Nope, not here for it. I mean, well, I'm here for it, but also, like, I don't feel bad for her.
I don't feel, let's not get it twisted. I don't feel bad for Lila when she's like frustrated that Kobe has gone one way or the other. I loved one of the first moments of Kobe being confrontational and argumentative, which is this really emotionally impactful scene to read. Lila does a lot of charity work, and she goes to a children's hospital and meets this young girl, Addie, who has cancer. She's undergoing chemo treatment, mm-hmm. and who we learn is the child of some really conservative parents who believe that her cancer is a punishment for being gay, and as soon as she's better, they plan to send her to conversion therapy. And this is the first time that you get that Lila is faced with maybe the real world consequences for people who have less power for not being heterosexual and not falling in line with certain societies. And she goes and does a press conference and comes out as queer. She says, I'm bisexual. And she is very outspoken against conversion therapy, which is great, except she didn't tell Kobe that she was going to do this. So Kobe is taken out of Kobe, all of any power that Kobe could have had is taken from her. She feels like left out of the plan. And on top of that, she has concerns about, like, what happens when this ends? What is the end game for Lila? She's not willing to just let Lila drive and have control over the situation anymore. And you see the first time the two of them having to talk to each other and figure out what the other wants and what the other plans to do. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a good shift in the power dynamics of their relationship.
Yeah, and I, like, within the, in the world, like, the trope world of the Ice Queen, and I'm saying this strictly as a trope, this is not aimed at anybody, but there very much is this writing style within of having to learn to co-navigate language and co-navigate space with inclusion when you're such a person who drives your own life and you're responsible for all the dots and checks being marked and things like that, what you have to unlearn to then let somebody else in. That scene really tore me in half. Being spoken for instead of with is something that is always really hard for me. I mean, Spangler's writing's always fucking well done. It's just, she's good because nothing seems, this plot point didn't seem like it was plopped to drive a narrative. It felt like something that if these two people existed in real life would probably be navigating at some point. It was very believable, and it also didn't feel like it was restrictive to a time. It was one of those plot points that it could have happened 5 years ago. It can probably sadly happen in the next five, and it makes sense.
Yeah, we often ask, I often ask, I don't want to speak for you. We talked in our tropes episode about a common put down for romance novels is there's nothing at stake. There are no real world consequences. And these are queer romances that are separated from the realities of being queer today. And so when we got to this scene and we got to the implications of this scene, it kind of took my breath away. Like, I couldn't believe that this was being addressed in this type of book. And I was so glad about it. And I thought that it was so, we got just enough information without it being a really sordid moment that played unfairly on our emotions.
Right. And the reason we meet Addie makes sense within this world too. It didn't just feel like a person brought in to talk about the politics of what it is like for young people who can't legally advocate for themselves to be in situations where people are putting them in more dangerous situations.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully the only thing that will ever date this scene is we will finally pass some sweeping federal mandate that conversion therapy is dangerous and not to do it. Here's to big dreams.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really, there's a lot of really heavy moments in a book that always feels semi-hopeful, and I guess a romance always feels a little semi-hopeful because I don't think I've ever read one that isn't an HEA at the end. We did not talk anything about this book before I read it, so I had no idea what I was getting into. You didn't warn me about anything. This scene is also followed by the piano music scene, right? Does that fight happen and then...
Yeah, so after this scene and after their first fight where Kobe kind of says, what the hell, you did this without talking to me.
So they get in a fight.
They get in a fight. Well, and then it's decided that Kobe's going to come live in Lila's, like, three brownstones cobbled together apartment so that they could really sell the romance. And yes, you're right. This is where we get the piano scene where the two of them are together.
Writing a song.
Writing a song.
You're getting hitched, like, in your voice. but this is okay. Here's a quick
scene, Rebecca.
So I do want to talk about something in this scene because there's, you know, so this book is written in third person, but then the third person could almost be a narrator in this book because there's some like sarcastic little quips that come from the like out third in. So, you know, Lila's writing the song. Kobe is just kind of inviting herself into the space. But then Lila's doing things like moving over on the bench, which is inviting to Kobe to sit. So the narrator basically goes, you know, Lila didn't want Kobe to sit, but she probably shouldn't have moved over. Kobe knew she didn't want Lila to sit, but she sat anyway. So it was just snark. And I'm here for it. And I love it. You know, and then they tinker around with, you know, the way that music flows and not the staccato, but the rhythmic form. And there's this great little exchange about, you know, Kobe offers some lyrics and they're not quite right, but they do influence Lila enough to find what she wants to be next. And Kobe's basically like, that's what collaboration is. It's not giving the person the next answer. It's giving them additional resources while they're looking for the answer. Mm-hmm. And this banter back and forth. And then we eventually have even this discussion where Kobe agrees with Lila, because Lila goes on a, I it's not a tangent. She just expresses her feelings. I need to be careful not to use dismissive language.
Well, so I think Lila feels defensive. I think there's something about Kobe that makes her off kilter. And so I believe this is the argument where Lila is saying, I have these career goals, X, Y, and Z. And Kobe says something. There are a few moments when Kobe, not without really even meaning to, I think she's just speaking without thinking sometimes, will say things like, well, I mean, I guess you're so, you know, like, or she says, Lila says, I always sing the truth. I always sing my truth. And Kobe says, oh, I guess I believe that. I guess I can see that now that I know you. And this sets Lila off on a, they have a discussion about the two different spheres that they exist in as celebrities. This is where Lila says, you know, you could play, you, Kobe, could play a serial killer and nobody would think that you are actually killing people. But when they would say that you're doing your job and you're really good at it and isn't it great that you can adapt in all of these different ways? But if I make drastic changes or if I make sudden decisions, like, it's either believable or...
Well, they start to unpack because Kobe's starting to present differently.
Right.
Kobe's starting to present with language that we would refer to as much more boyish with an I, a little bit more of an edge. Mm-hmm. Not as femme presenting necessarily, and arguably that's Kobe growing into her skin, and because of the job, like the industry she's in, the acting industry, there are more roles versus Lila, who says every time, you know, I change my dress and my hair, I have to justify it and prove that I'm, you know, expanding as an artist and not just taking a risk for attention.
Right. And she also, at one point, there's a quote or there's a moment in this discussion where Lila says, you know, I have a lot of fans, I reach a lot of people, so do you, but when I change to address even more people, I'm accused of being a sellout, and nobody would say that about you. And there's a great moment where Lila is just kind of going on, and she's defending herself and winding herself up, and Kobe keeps trying to interrupt her and finally has to say, I've been agreeing with you this whole time. I get it. I got you. And then they make out. But it's not for any cameras. It's not part
and
of
again,
the
plan. And again, Lila initiates that. So minus the first kiss in the bathroom, Lila initiates basically everything.
Yeah.
But also, Spangler is one of those authors who always writes about consent. Her characters in her books actively say yes or what they want. Like, consent is a very much a thing within the realm and the world in which she writes. Even she even has a short erotica story. If you have Kindle Unlimited, you can get it. It's called Safe Word. And even in that, and there's a lot that goes on in that, consent still happens. She is consent is vital in her book.
And in this book, it's the consent conversation is sexy as hell. It's like so well done and it feels so genuine and it doesn't feel like a preaching moment the way that I think it could easily be. Not only are they verbally consenting to taking their intimacy another step further, but they're also expressing like, this is what I want to do to you. Is that okay? And
yeah, Spangler's consent sounds like something that happens between two real people. Yes. It's not, you know, the contract on the paper with, okay, pause, sign this, flip to page two, put your initials there. It's very much that conversation that happens in the heat of the moment anyway, of two people who just desperately want to touch each other. And then it's made even more sensual or sexual by saying, I want you to touch me. Mm-hmm. So it becomes consent paired with the language of desire.
Mm-hmm.
So it's incredibly effective.
It's so good. And my favorite quote is from this scene. Lila, even when she's making her statements, even when she's deciding to do whatever she's doing, she kind of bucks against labels. And you never get the sense that she feels inadequate or any kind of way about being with a woman for the first time, because so much of it is fake. And there's this great line in this scene just before they are about to have sex. They're undressing. Kobe is kind of taking control. And Lila says, "Kobe, I've never been with a woman before." And the quote, "Kobe smiled, sexy and taut, as she crawled up along her body. It's okay. I have."
Y'all can't see this right now, but, like, Caitlin just threw herself back on her bed and is just, like, melting. She's just gone.
Oh,
Caitlin, the microphone is in front. If I still need you, please.
My microphone is still here.
We've all been there at some point.
We've all been there at some point, and it's like, I wish I was that suave saying that to people. But, ugh.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's easy to be, I don't want to use cocky, but I think it, like, confident, arrogant mm-hmm. in situations like this. And I think it's also permission, you know? If one person's usually emotionally and physically more in charge, the fastest way to make things comfortable in a more intimate situation is when the other person verbally assesses that they're ready to trade out for a little while. Mm-hmm. And I think you find that a lot with Ice Queen novels alone, that the Ice Queen usually is melted when they trust somebody else enough to be responsible for the energy focus at that time. Not even take the power, just take any insecurity and say, it's okay, you don't need to focus on that, let's focus on this instead.
Well, and this is one of the first times when we see Kobe really being an equal in their relationship. You see her being the confident person that she's trying to be in public, and you see her being that in this private, intimate setting, and it lays the groundwork for their future relationship in a way that I really like. And it also reveals a depth of Kobe where you sort of see that and you say, oh, okay, like I can see this little hidden dimension that would make people believe that you're doing X, Y, and Z right now.
But there's moments saved for Lila too, that Lila has not been within, like, this queer world long enough that makes sense to her yet. Because when they complete their actions for the evening, Kobe says thank you, and Lila's like, why are you thanking me? It should be the other way around. And she starts to put these rules into places to, like, where
well,
that
falls asleep. Yeah, it, no, like, Kobe says thank you, and Lila sort of is like, what? And then she was like, I'm going to respond and take control of this, and then she falls asleep.
Yes,
which is, like, such a we've all been there.
The world thing.
Yeah, we've all been
let's
there.
Move on.
So, I love that the fomance works. This is me being, like, a Capricorn who enjoys seeing plans come to fruition. Kobe starts getting different types of movie deals. Like, they're getting good attention. They're getting good press. And you see the struggle internally for Kobe as she's getting more successful, is she's trying to balance the fact that she has shared these intimate moments with Lila, but she doesn't quite know how Lila feels about her or if any of it is real, plus the fact that she's just completely lost all sense of privacy, and she's now been raised into this different echelon of celebrity, and she's getting hounded and people want her attention, which I thought was a good undercurrent of tension for the rest of the book.
Another thing that Spengler does that's really strong, I would argue, in the writing style, is both women are carrying secrets throughout the book where they hint to each other at things that they're kind of maintaining but never fully get there. We have a moment where we have the two of them possibly in a situation where they may be intimate again, and Lila wakes up from a nightmare where she's saying another woman's name, and Kobe takes it upon herself to say, well, let's talk about this, and also this is not a time to be physically or emotionally exposed to each other in other ways, because obviously something was going on for you. So we have, you know, the Selena narrative that we have hints about, and then there's a lot of things revolving around the movie and however and whomever Kobe may have been with previously, and what that type of relationship looked like in the past. And neither of them share much more than a line or two at a time. And both of them are too proud. Well, I should say Lila's too proud to ask Kobe for more information. And she tells Kobe no when Kobe asks for more information.
Yeah, it's effective. It, again, it feels like there are real stakes here in the relationship beyond, will we get caught by the public? You know, will this work? So Kobe throughout the book has little instances, as you've said, where she's maybe given a hint to a previous relationship. The author of the book, Vigilant, which Kobe is doing all of this work to be made into a movie project and to be done in the way that she wants it to be done. The author, Talia, and Kobe used to have a romantic relationship. Talia protected Kobe right after she turned 18 on the set of a movie which sounds like nobody liked. It was kind of panned even within the universe of this book. The writer Talia left Hollywood, left the public life, because in protecting Kobe she exposed herself to kind of attacks from angry men who wanted to get with a newly 18-year-old starlet, and with producers who wanted X, Y, and Z. And so a big motivation for Kobe going so far as to make this movie the way she feels like it needs to be made in her head is to make up that debt to her former lover. And they have a friendly relationship. They really do confide in each other in a way that you don't see Kobe do with many other people. But Lila learns about this relationship at a costume party that she and Kobe are hosting together, and she hears the words because another woman, another musician, is flirting with Kobe in front of her. Mm-hmm. And it's a moment where she's like, how could this other woman, I think her name is Cordelia, how could she figure this out in 5 minutes when I couldn't do it in several months and I've been with Kobe, and why didn't she tell me? And am I just a stand-in temporarily for, you know, this woman that she's put all of this on the line for? Not to get too psychological, but one of the hallmarks of an ice queen that I really identify a lot with, and I try not to let this impede my current life, is the feeling that I've kept myself so apart and so emotionally unavailable. So if I do share my feelings, I will be a burden and I will be seen as less than perfect. I feel that keenly in a lot of relationships. And I felt it so much with Lila, and that's probably why I have such a soft spot for her, because in that moment you can really see her just start to feel like an ache, where she blames herself for being like, well, how could you not recognize this? What about you didn't allow Kobe to share this with you? While at the same time feeling really betrayed by the person that you haven't even given a chance. It's such a catch-22, and it just fit really well with the trajectory that we know Lila is on, where she is used to being controlled and is used to being seen as perfect and always in command of her emotions. And the downside of that is she's not really let people into her personal life and let people see her.
Right. And the thing within this world, too, with the Ice Queen so much, like the makeover component of the person the Ice Queen is with, which is often a driving point, because I would argue within the trope, as well as maybe some people who identify within that trope in real life, is a project is this grand thing. It perpetuates plot, and for real life people, it creates something structured that has a trajectory that can be seen. Mm-hmm. So Kobe is physically starting to be within a body that, and like a physical manifestation of herself that feels more true to who she is, that isn't just predicated on who she once was on TV. And other people notice, because that's what happens when you start to feel confident with yourself, is people notice confidence, and confidence is sexy, and sexy gets hit on, it gets flirted with. That's just the trajectory. So, you know, part of Kobe getting to this point where at this costume party, other women are approaching her, is based on the confidence she shares with Lila, not even in intimate acts, just in acts of coexisting together. I don't know if Lila could, like, if she was a real person, could have been in any situation prior to this moment where she would have been able to even see Kobe maybe having a history outside of what they were currently navigating anyway. Because the ability to take in what people have experienced before and give them the autonomy of who they may be now with that experience is a selfless act, and selflessness takes a lot of lack of control. Like, mm-hmm. you have to let other people handle that at that time. You know, the previous scene we talked about, Kobe, you know, alludes a little bit to, like, the book and to such, and there is a line Spangler writes through the third person narration where Lila says something like, well, she wanted to know, but she wasn't going to give Kobe that power of knowing she wanted to know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sounds super lonely. Do not.
Well, it is, and that's why this is so devastating when, you know, inevitably they push away from each other. Mm-hmm.
And then we have Lila's sister.
Yeah, so heavy, deep, heavy sighs on both ends of the recording here. We get lots of allusions to the fact that Lila did not have a good home life, that there was just there's something there. Early in the book, we see her sending checks to someone named Selena after this costume party, after, you know, she and Kobe have started to share some intimate moments together. Lila decides to go confront Selena, who we learn is her sister, who just straight up walked out of her life when she was young. It's a story that is so simple. You know, I was kind of expecting something really over the top and over dramatic. It's a simple story about feeling left behind by the people that are supposed to care the most about you. And you really see how that has impacted Lila. You understand why she needs to always have control and why she feels like she can only take care of herself. And she says, you know, no one else is going to take care of me, so I need to be as successful as possible to take care of myself.
You don't need bells and whistles to completely destroy somebody.
Yeah.
And walking away without explanation is probably the least bells and whistles you can put in. And no matter how much work that person does on themselves, they have no way of ever understanding your reasoning, mm-hmm. which is just...
Yeah. I mean, it was such a heart-wrenching scene because Lila shows up to her sister. She's been financially supporting Selena.
If anything, she feels entitled to it.
Yes, she feels like she made Lila the success that she is. This really fucks with Lila's head, and when she goes back to the home that she is sharing with Kobe, she is just completely shut down and essentially kicks Kobe to the curb. She says, you know, no, we didn't share any, you know, I got what I needed from this. You got what you needed from this. And I'm not sharing anything more with you. And I'm done. Oh, oh.
And then Kobe goes to her person because Kobe has a healthier relationship in her life than Lila has.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an HEA. We get our happily ever after eventually. But this is a world where things could be really huge when they exploded, because there's all these other factors that are just beyond what people who, you know, work a 9-to-5 and go day to day could experience. And I really, really appreciate Rachel Spangler as an author for choosing to have these very micro, soft, insular explosions happen to drive these two to where they get, and to because it would have been very easy with Addie's character and that trajectory to make like this a big thing. And even that is handled in such a way that it's very much about what the person is going through instead of what the media is saying that person's going through. And for a world that is so affluent and full of so much structure, and we hear over and over again about the power men try to take away from these women all the time, that everything happens very internally, and that internal leads to sweeping things that for them are beyond comparison, but on the greater picture, you know, in 2 days there's somebody else to take that front page, so it doesn't matter anymore. And I think that's just a testament to the writing, that you understand the human condition is so incredibly complex that you don't need to add.
I love the big dramatic, like,
moment. You like the grand gesture.
I like the grand gesture, and we do not really get that in this book, and I didn't care. I actually loved that their disillusion was so quiet and personal, and the coming back together was also so quiet and personal, because basically what it was is Kobe sets up a meeting at their mutual agent's offices, and she is hoping the whole time that Lila will be there and that she'll show up because it's something that she will really care about, and she doesn't show up for the meeting. Kobe walks out into the hallway, and all Lila had to do, and it's such a big step for her as a character, all she had to do was let go of her control and show up into a situation that she didn't know if she'd be able to come out as the winner. And yes,
you just said it. You just said all of it. And I'm saying this as a person who, anyway, yes, all you have to, that's vital within the Ice Queen narrative, is the Ice Queen isn't the boombox over the head grand gesture. The Ice Queen isn't the, you know, rocks on your window. The Ice Queen isn't, you know, a flash mob. The Ice Queen is she's just there, vulnerable, and ready for the vulnerability to continue no matter how uncomfortable she may be, because being there to her is more important than you being alone. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
I love it. And there's no will they or won't they. They connect there, and that's our big moment. And we have a beautiful epilogue where kind of everything's fallen into place and everybody is fine, and now everybody's a triple threat who can sing and dance and act and are Oscar nominated for a movie that I think is the equivalent of The Hunger Games.
Oh, and if you didn't read the book, Addie's okay. She gets emancipated from her family.
Yeah, and she gets to work on the movie.
Yeah, and Talia, like, takes her under her wing, not in a romantic way, but, like, in a big sister, cool aunt, parental way, and
Did you have any questions?
Am I a horrible person if I say no?
No. All right, so we always kick off an episode with what we're currently reading and enjoying. So what are you up to these days?
So last week, I listen to Don't Call Me Hero because Lori Prince read it, and basically if Lori Prince reads something, I'm gonna listen to it, and loved it. Went back and read the book to just have that experience with it, and then read the next three in the series. So Eliza Linsky and I have been spending a lot, her writing and I have been spending a lot of time together. What are you reading or doing?
Well, I made an Instagram post about this, but I have been devouring the Honor series by Radcliffe. I read the first five in maybe 10 days. I had to take a break because I started having nightmares that I was a Secret Service agent. Don't recommend. I recommend the books. I don't recommend having nightmares about them. And I'm taking a little break from that because, as as I've said, I needed a little break. And so I actually don't have anything in my queue. I haven't decided what I'm going to be reading next. So if anyone has suggestions, I would love to hear.
Caitlin, where can people find you if they'd like to talk to you and give you recommendations for books?
So I can be most often tracked down on Instagram. I post daily queer art at Same Sex in the City, or you can find me on Twitter at Same Sex the City. What about you?
You can find me on Instagram at Rebecca Writes a Romance, or you can find me on Twitter at Rebecca ATTT Pod. And then Caitlin, where can you find us and a link tree to get to all these things?
Sure. We are on Twitter at ATTT Pod. We are on Instagram at A Tip of the Tongue, and our link tree with links to all of the different places where you can hear these episodes can be found in the bios of both of those social medias. We've also started including links to the publisher's page of each book. So right now we have Rachel Spangler's In Development up there. And once we announce what our next book will be, we'll have that up there too. So keep an eye out for that.
Look at us making sure authors get the credit they deserve. Go, mm-hmm. Let's go.
Try to make sure people get paid.